Vice President Kamala Harris made a trip to the U.S.-Mexico border on Friday, touring a port of entry and a Border Patrol processing facility in El Paso. And today, former President Trump and Texas Governor Greg Abbott made an appearance together to promote the construction of more sections of a border wall. The political attention comes as immigration authorities continue to see high numbers of people coming into the country. In May, more than 180,000 people were apprehended while trying to cross the border. Thousands of immigrants seeking asylum are still in federal custody. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what's happening at the border now and what the Biden administration is doing? What would you like to see done to deal with the rise in immigration? Would you like to see Congress work on legislation to reform the immigration system? If you or someone in your family has immigrated to the U.S., love to hear about your experience and what you think. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dara Lind is a reporter covering immigration policy for ProPublica. Dara, welcome back to Central Time. Dara, when we talked to you back in March, border crossings and people in detention were pretty high. How have things moved since then?
So there's been a continued increase in the number of people who Border Patrol agents have caught crossing into the U.S. That is not that most of those people are still, remember, being turned away immediately and sent back to Mexico or back to their home countries under the public health order that's referred to as Title 42 under the section of the U.S. code that allowed the CDC to do this. That was put in place by the Trump administration. It's still in place now for most people crossing into the U.S. The Biden administration has started making some noise about potentially scaling that back as they take the position that the U.S. has turned the corner on the coronavirus pandemic, but there hasn't been any kind of wide-scale official action. There are like little exemptions being built in here and there. So while the number of people, well, you know, the top line number of apprehensions is way above even what we saw in 2019, if you look at the number of people who are actually, you know, if you try to do an apples to apples comparison, we're not there. And that means that things like, you know, Border Patrol, border processing facilities, that immigration detention are not at kind of the strained point that they were in 2019 or even in even earlier this year, as the Biden administration has like has kind of continued to keep these interim facilities for children in particular to alleviate the crunch at the border there. So that resource and pipeline issue that was really the crux of the border crisis as it was being described in February and March is less of a problem now. But those top line numbers, because they're still high, are creating an easy opportunity to, you know, to raise the question, to raise the idea that something unusual is going on, which it is, right? The Title 42 order is certainly unusual, but raising the kind of specter that all of these people are being allowed to get into the U.S., which they are very much not.
Right. To be clear, Dara, if I have this right anyway, that person who maybe came up from Central America, they're turned back under that COVID policy. They don't have the opportunity to start the asylum process. Do I have that right?
Right. That is the big difference between what standard immigration law says is supposed to happen and what this Title 42 policy does. And so the, you know, the argument during the Trump administration was that asylum was a loophole, right? That an immigrant who wanted to come into the U.S. could just tell a Border Patrol agent, I want asylum, and they would be allowed to stay in the U.S. indefinitely. The Title 42 policy closes, you know, if that's a loophole, it's closed by this policy. So now we're talking about just the, you know, if the number of apprehensions is a concern now, that is only justifiable based on the idea that people should somehow be prevented from even setting foot on U.S. soil, not from concerns that they're being, that someone who is apprehended by Border Patrol is then being allowed to stay.
And now how about kids in particular, unaccompanied minors or accompanied minors for that matter? The Biden administration said, hey, we're going to treat them differently than the Trump administration. What has happened in practice?
So as far as unaccompanied minors are concerned, they are being allowed to stay in the United States and seek legal status. That is kind of what caused the real pipeline issue that we were seeing earlier this spring, because there weren't the facilities to, you know, safely house those kids. The Biden administration's response has been to spin up a bunch of federally run interim, you know, influx care facilities. Some of those are kind of scheduled to come offline in coming weeks, but even just having something in operation for a few months, that can be a very long time for a child. And the safety corners that they had to cut, or the things that they kind of abrogated in order to spin these facilities up quickly, are now beginning to become a concern. At Fort Bliss, which is one of the biggest facilities where kids are being held, there have been lots of concerns that kids aren't getting necessary psychological care, that they just feel that they're being abandoned there, that they're kind of warehoused. And this is something that a lot of advocates and former officials were raising as concerns when the facilities got spun up, because they were saying, if you don't build in minimum safety and health standards now, you're going to find a point where these influx facilities are around longer than you want them to be, and then it's going to be too late. And so while it does look like the Biden administration has been able to speed the rate at which kids are being placed with relatives and therefore out of federal custody entirely, there definitely is a concern about the way that they've chosen to fix that problem.
Talking to Dara Lind, reporter covering immigration policy for ProPublica, looking at the latest news from the U.S.-Mexico border. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own experiences at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jody is with us in Downing. Jody, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Jody?
So many issues here. I work with in two nonprofits in Guatemala. And I know why people are coming to the U.S., and it's poverty and starvation and lack of jobs. But, you know, what I really wanted to talk about is the importance of, if there was policy that made it easy for the farms to get farm workers, these people would not have to come up illegally. And we need the workforce. And so I'm really a proponent for helping the DACA, the Dreamer kids, get legal status. And I'm really a proponent for expanding the farm program so that we can bring up temporary workers, because these people want to work. We need the work. And they want to go home. And they can't go home when they come across the border undocumented.
Jody, thanks a lot for the call. Dara, Jody gives us a lot to work with. First of all, her point, her case for more legal opportunities for people to come up and work in the country, as an alternative to coming in illegal ways. Is that something people are talking about now?
It's certainly something that the Biden administration has on its kind of nice to have list. The problem with this is that expanding legal immigration is mostly something that only Congress can do. Unlike comparable countries like Canada, there isn't a lot of executive branch flexibility in that regard. So the Biden administration says, yes, we want Congress to pass a broad immigration reform. And that's about as far as they can go. They have taken a little bit of executive authority to expand the number of non-farm temporary work visas. And they've actually earmarked a bunch of those for Northern Triangle, which is Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, the countries that have been kind of the biggest, that have seen the biggest rise in over the last half decade in unauthorized migration to the U.S. They have earmarked for those nationals. They have a little bit more flexibility in that regard, as far as I understand it, than they do in farm work. But the problem here is that as the conditions in these countries get more and more dire, the prospect of being able to come temporarily but then having to go back isn't necessarily as appealing as it might have once been. And so there are, you know, the idea of kind of restoring what academics call circular migration, the kind of work migration we had in the middle of the 20th century, when it was fairly easy to come in the U.S., work for, you know, a couple of years and then go back. It's not super clear that that is what we would see if it were much easier to come work temporarily. There are going to be people who are going to want to live in the U.S. because it's safer. And that's where the hard policy issues come in.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Dara Lind, immigration reporter for ProPublica, getting an update on the situation at the southern border after a visit from Vice President Harris. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What fixes, if any, do you think our immigration system needs? Are you worried about the situation in detention centers along the border, about the number of people trying to make it to claim asylum at the southern border? Do you have any hope that Congress will be able to reach agreements on immigration? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with Dara Lind, immigration reporter for ProPublica, looking at the latest developments along the U.S.-Mexico border. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your hopes for changes in the laws if you'd like to see them, your questions for our guest. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Sheboygan. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon.
What do you want to bring up, Tom?
Well, I don't want to come across as the fact of not having empathy, not having compassion, especially for the young children that are coming across our border. But I'm just trying to figure out, excuse me, what is the end game here? How are we going to afford this? How are we going to sustain this? Both the previous administration and the current administration have had arguments over, can we afford to have a $300 or a $600 stipend on unemployment? Can we afford to do $600 or $1,400 stimulus? And at what, you know, who's considered rich and who can afford this, and what can we pay for that afford to do our rent during the pandemic and our mortgage forbearance. And it's always the, what can we afford to do? What can we afford to do? What can we afford to do? And yet we're talking about mental health of children that are not citizens.
I gotcha. I mean, Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Dara, what is this costing the U.S., these border enforcement efforts, housing, asylum seekers, and so forth?
So this is definitely a good question, and it's one that we don't have a great answer to. The office in the Department of Health and Human Services that is responsible for the care of migrant children, like, doesn't have a massive emergency budget to spin up these kind of emergency care facilities. And so there definitely have been questions. The administration has, on the one hand, maintained that it doesn't need to ask Congress for more funds for the year. And on the other hand, when it said that it was going to, that it wasn't going to be as aggressive as then candidate Biden promised in terms of resettling refugees who were processed abroad, the argument that they gave at one point there was that they had spent, that they had needed to spend this money on housing unaccompanied children. We're not talking about anything on the magnitude of, you know, sending out unemployment checks to hundreds of millions of to tens of millions of Americans or anything like that. But it's a concern more about, you know, transparency and the questions of whether this kind of emergency influx response is the best stance, because everyone ideally believes that the children shouldn't be in government custody for any sustained period of time, that they should be with their relatives, and therefore, you know, that also has the benefit of not costing the government as much. But the question of whether cut too many corners in screening potential relative sponsors and therefore run the risk that, you know, someone could be, that you could be releasing kids into danger is not necessarily, you know, justified by the budget alone. So there definitely are questions about kind of how this is being paid for, but it's not, you know, we're talking about at most 10, you know, tens of thousands of kids or 10,000 kids at any one time, and really a lot less than that at this point. So it's not the most, it's not, you know, we're not talking about trillions of dollars here.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We'll go now to Tim calling from Northern Wisconsin. Tim, hi.
Hey, so in your last couple of minutes, I was listening to your show for the first time, and I think that we in the media, there is a clear and present messaging discrepancy that is causing a lot of this situation. And I want to know, why is it that during the Trump administration, shows like this and the media portrayed these, as you were talking about them a couple of minutes ago, children's migration housing facilities or whatever you're calling them now. A year and 2 years ago, they were kids in cages. And now you're putting a bunch of fluff on this and calling it something different. It's not a crisis now. Now it's a humanitarian effort rather than kids in cages. And let's be clear, the Biden administration, on their first week in office, I believe it was, when they overturned the Remain in Mexico policy, this was a clear message to everyone south of the border. Come on, America is open. And I believe that the Biden administration has these children on their hands that are crossing the Darien, I believe it's the Darien Straits and the jungles and the trip up here where 10 to 15% of these people are dying on this journey. This is a clear failure of the Biden administration to.
Tim, I gotcha. Couple points there. First of all, Dara, I mean, kids in cages under the Trump administration, something different now. Are conditions basically the same as Tim is suggesting?
I mean, I personally have never used the term kids in cages for exactly this reason. It obscures more than it reveals, right? And these facilities are definitely a thing that the Trump administration also used and that did meet with some pressure from activists and Democrats at that point. But frankly, a lot of those same activists and Democrats have also been very frustrated with the Biden administration's use of this. There's less political pressure now than there was when they were first spinning up these facilities in February. But there were a couple of sites actually that the Biden administration was considering putting facilities and ended up not doing so because there was this pressure from local activists not to. But, you know, it's also flatly not true that ending the Remain in Mexico program changed the current border situation, because most people weren't being enrolled in the Remain in Mexico program when Biden came into office. Most people were being expelled under the public health order, which is exactly what they still are. So the idea that despite the fact that current U.S. policy is to turn people back, a message has been sent that the U.S. is open, I'm not saying that that's not an understanding that some people have, but it's not a reflection of the U.S. actually changing its policy. It's in this very tricky realm where it's really hard to tell, you know, smuggler misinformation from word of mouth, from, you know, misunderstandings about when things are going to open up.
Tim, thanks for the call. We'll go to Obed now in Green Bay. Obed, hi.
Hey, big fan of the show. I'm kind of just wanted to say a few things. I'm a DACA recipient myself. I was an undocumented immigrant till I believe 2011 when Barack Obama had the deferred action for childhood arrival. I honestly feel like as somebody that went through it all, on one hand, I understand that there's only a certain number of people that the country can sustain. But, you know, my parents came to this country and they risked everything just to give my sister and I a better life. I feel that most Americans don't really even understand how the immigration system even works. You know, it's easy for people to say, get in line, do it the right way, but what is the right way? Do they even understand how the immigration system works? How do you apply for a visa? What the process of getting a green card to become a citizen? And I'll just take my comments out there. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for sharing your story. And Dara, that question about to get in line, what is the line? How easy is it to immigrate legally into the United States.
I mean, it continues to be true until some, you know, major legislation from Congress that that there are two main ways to do that. One of which is, you know, getting a work permit, which, as you know, the previous caller mentioned, there's just so much more demand than supply. And the other is having a relative who's already in the U.S. and is a citizen. And, you know, depending, and that's a very, that depends on categories, but people from the countries that sent, that have historically sent the most, or that have in recent memory sent the most immigrants to the U.S. are dealing with very, very long delays. If you add to that the fact that U.S. laws that were passed in the, you know, largely in the mid 1990s made it much, much, much harder to become legal if you'd ever been unauthorized in the U.S., what you ended up with was, as the first caller mentioned, a scenario in which once you're in the U.S. without authorization, the safest thing you could do would be to kind of hunker down and stay and settle. And so we continue to have, you know, for the most part, this extremely long resident, extremely settled unauthorized population. And that's something that's very easy to lose track of when we're talking about the, you know, the news cycles about the border, is that that's, these have not been in large enough numbers to really shift the baseline of what the unauthorized immigrant population in the U.S. looks like. We're still talking about overwhelmingly people who have been here for a decade or longer. And the, you know, the more that the question of some kind of legalization or amnesty gets caught up in the politics of, well, if we do anything for people already here, then it's going to send a message to the border, the harder it is for, you know, the more those people just end up getting caught in the middle and victims of a politics that they have no control over.
Thanks for that call. And Dara, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
Dara Lind is a reporter covering immigration policy at ProPublica. She joined us for a look at what's happening at the U.S.-Mexico border after recent high-profile political visits there.